Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A new play tells an ancient story with timeless relevance. Socrates is written by Tim Blake Nelson with Michael Stuhlbarg in the titular role. It's a retelling of the trial and death of the ancient philosopher Socrates, but its messages reverberate today about the fragility of a divided democracy, the way that falsehoods can be amplified, and how laws made to uphold justice can be abused. Socrates officially opens at the Public Theater tomorrow. It's the first show of the Public Theater's Onassis Festival 2019, which uses theater to celebrate, reevaluate, and consider anew the concept of democracy. Later in the conversation with Tim and Michael, we'll be joined by Karen Brooke Hopkins, Senior Advisor for Onassis USA. But right now, Tim and Michael, you're up. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Great to be here.
So last time you were here, Tim, you were telling me a little bit about this. You sort of teased that you were had this play coming up about Socrates at the Public, but I didn't know that you actually tried to do this 30 years ago.
Yes, I tried to write it 30 years ago, and I failed. I just didn't.
Your friend Michael just no nod, like,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I didn't know him then.
But thank God I waited 30 years because Michael Stuhlbarg, just as I grew into being able to at least attempt to write the story, and I really did need to grow into it. I needed 30 years of experience, not only in telling stories, but also in life as a husband and father and a voter and a participant in our own democracy here in the United States in the last several decades. So not only did I need to grow into being able to write this story, but Michael is, I think, the only actor on the planet who could play this role, at least in English. There may be some other actors out there in other countries, but I know of no actor in English who could pull off what Michael does every night, under the direction of Doug Hughes, I should also mention, and with our incredible cast. And so the 30 years gave us Michael, too, and that's a real boon for this production.
It is such an athletic performance for you. I mean, I have to think that you are exhausted at the end of every night.
Honestly,
I mean, it is you. It is.
Yeah, it's a lot of me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is an absolute ensemble mm-hmm. show. I mean, it's a tag team kind of thing where I get the benefit of and the delight in being confronted with some of the best actors out there. Many of them, fortunately, my friends, some of whom I knew before, and a bunch of new faces as well, but they're all fantastic in what they do, and it really feels like the group of us lifting this thing every chance we get to do it. So it's been a huge challenge and a wonderful one.
Tim, what was your first exposure to Socrates?
I studied classics in college, and I took a course in Plato with Martha Nussbaum, who's one of the preeminent thinkers. I keep saying this, panegyrizing everyone, but just like Michael, it's true about Michael. He's one of the best actors around, and Martha Nussbaum is one of the great thinkers alive, particularly in terms mm-hmm. of the history of ancient thought. And she was my professor for Plato. And then I was so taken, not only with the subject matter, but also with her, that I just continued to take at least one course with her a semester, every semester from junior year on. After I'd studied, actually the spring of my sophomore year, after I'd studied Plato with her.
Once you began writing this piece, where did you go to research it? Because we have Plato's
dialogues.
But other things are less reliable, which is also part of the theme of the show, is that the written word is not always reliable, or thought to be reliable by Socrates anyway. So where did you go when you sat down and said, I'm going to write this character who we have some information about?
It took an enormous amount of research over several years. And then the research continued while I was writing the play, of course, which is the way I like to do it, because it allows you to zero in and really dig deeply in certain areas. And Plato himself is not the most reliable source for Socrates, and we go into that in the play. And so just as important as reading the dialogues of Plato, and I would say perhaps more important, was reading a lot of scholarship. And to a degree, Martha Nussbaum was my guide. She gave me a reading list, and then those thinkers whom she had me read led me to the thinkers whom they would reference. And it goes on and on and on in a wonderful way. But I was never bored. In fact, it was an act of love in all the best ways. I enjoyed every moment of it and have continued to enjoy it. And now, in this wonderful production, now the world of the play is really being handed over to Michael and the actors. And you really feel like you're in the room with the people when you go to the actual characters when you go to see this play. And that's because of the wonderful production and this incredible team of actors. So now I get to watch.
Michael, I'm interested in your portrayal of Socrates because I guess I didn't expect this. Maybe I just my ignorance on it. He's quite passionate. I mean, and some of it sometimes comes in the way of rage. Some of it is intellectual passion. When you think about what makes Socrates get up in the morning and be Socrates, what is it?
His passion to learn about every aspect of life that there is out there. He in some cases, from the research I remember, is he would, you know, sleep only when he had to sleep. He would be up as long as he could be. If I remember correctly from the symposium, he went on for a whole other day of engaging in dialogues with other people before he eventually ended up going home to sleep. But he just couldn't wake up. He couldn't wait to be up in the morning to discover something new and to engage his fellow citizens about the best way to live. And I feel like perhaps one cross-section between the two of us is I feel like I have a great passion to learn and a great passion for life as well. So in some ways, it's a marriage of his passion with my own. And Tim encouraged that. I think some of what has been wonderful about this is it's Tim's version of who this man is. It honors what I think Tim believes from all of his research, what the spirit perhaps of the real man was.
Not an always likable person in your play, Socrates.
Yes, he is not always likable, and he recognizes that. The character recognized that, and there's a lot of self indictment that's not that I put in there. That's not in the in the apology, which was one of my sources. And I guess the question for me eventually was, well, there has to have been more to why they killed him. He must really have pissed off some very powerful individuals, not just in an ideological way, but in a personal way. And I think there's plenty of evidence for that if you cross-reference the different sources. And so, yes, that's the guy we're putting on stage, and that's the guy who interests me.
It's more interesting than just a hero story.
Yeah, you don't want to do a hagiographic portrayal of Socrates. Not only is it not interesting, I don't think it's accurate, and I don't think that you're putting a human being on the stage. And what you get to see when you see Michael's performance at the center of this play, and with the other actors as well, but Michael has a good deal of direct address, mm-hmm. is you get the soul of a real man through, can't see that on radio, but Michael's extraordinary eyes that allow you to look right into him and that look right through you.
You often address, as you're making, Socrates is making his case for who he is and why he is and what he believes, mm-hmm.
and what happened
and
to him.
What happened to him.
Yes.
You address us, the audience.
Yes.
Can you see us? And I'm curious,
yes.
what do you see looking back at you?
I see every variety of whether someone is fed up, whether someone is engaged, whether someone is sleeping, whether someone is curious, whether their heart is open, whether their mind is open, because the audience in our production does become the makeshift jury, mm-hmm. For Socrates' trial. So that is fascinating. Also, in his responses to them discovery of what has been decided upon, when he has to perhaps come up with his own punishment for what they've said that he's responsible for or that he's guilty of. The communication continues throughout, and that is fascinating too, because much of the reaction is not what I expected it to be.
I heard, "Oh, come on!"
There's all kinds of things that come back at us. It's terrific, and very alive, and very present. I mean, it seems like it could very easily be happening right now.
My guests are Tim Blake Nelson and Michael Stuhlbarg. We're talking about Socrates, who is currently playing at the Public Theater. Actually, it opens tomorrow at the Public Theater. Stay with us. We'll have more of our conversation after a quick break.
WNYC supporters include the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting progress in education, science, and the arts. Information at cysimsfoundation.org. Roger McNamee, author of Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe, the story of a tech venture capitalist and early mentor to Mark Zuckerberg, who wakes up to Facebook's influence on and implications for society, available everywhere books are sold. Ensemble for the Romantic Centuries production of Hans Christian Andersen, a new play about his life featuring the music of Benjamin Britten, Henry Purcell, and more, now through May 25th only. Tickets at romanticcentury.org.
In the ashes of the wildfires, recovery is slow.
For officials, it's hard to correlate these deaths to the fire, but the people who have lost their loved ones, you know, they blame the fire and the position that they're in.
California's campfires burned more than 5 months ago, but communities say they are still facing loss. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway, weekday afternoons at 3 on 93.9 FM.
This is WNYC, 93.9 FM and AM 820, NPR News and the New York Conversation.
Today on Fresh Air, biographer Robert Caro talks about unearthing the seamy details of political deal-making to understand the nature of political power. Caro spent decades researching the careers of President Lyndon Johnson and New York City power broker Robert Moses. Tune in today at 2 on 93.9 FM. This is All of It on WNYC. My guests are Tim Blake Nelson and Michael Stuhlbarg. We're talking about Socrates, which is going to be playing at the Public Theater as part of the Onassis Festival. It's so amazing in this play, Tim, that so many of the themes that we're talking about, whether it be politicians who use falsehoods to get what they want, whether it be you should experience things in the first hand versus reading them, it just feels like a meditation on everything we watch in the news today.
It was sort of stunning. I think any of us who try to create stuff, we depend on our antennae. And although I started writing this before our present occupant of the Oval Office even announced he was going to run for the Republican nomination, and we would have this swell of populism bring him to office. I was just as anyone who tries to create, getting stuff in my antennae. And a lot of what I've put in the play was there in the initial draft. And then, of course, as I started to shape the play, stuff was happening that didn't need much of an antennae to get into my process. And I was able to do that with a more of a degree of intentionality. And so, yes, I think that the only reason to do a play about Socrates now is if there's current valency or relevance. And I hope that we found a really nice balance. And I hope what we're doing is valid in that regard.
As I mentioned, this is part of the Onassis USA Festival, and Karen Brooks Hopkins has joined us in studio. Karen, can you explain what Onassis USA is?
The Onassis Foundation. The Onassis Foundation has a cultural center both in Athens and in New York. And the purpose of the foundation's work in the arts is to promote Hellenic values. Citizenship, democracy, all those Greek words that you know, that you learned in sure. junior high school, we're promoting them at the Onassis Foundation. So what we try to do is to find contemporary expressions in all artistic disciplines that convey these values. So I had done some work with the Public Theater last summer when we brought the revival of the Gospel of Colonus to the Delacorte Theater, and then I learned that, like, Tim was doing Socrates, so the karma was, like, overwhelming. And we decided that we would work together with the Public Theater and create a festival, like in all venues of the Public Theater, with Socrates as the centerpiece, and then we would build things around it. Events in music, dance, we would bring Greek artists over, talks, many different kinds of events. And in this way, we would enhance what was happening on the main stage.
Michael, have you thought about democracy differently since being part of this play?
That's an interesting question. It's as alive and messy as it ever was. And it's nice to know that when it began all those years ago, pre our story, I think about 38 years or something like that, that it was confusing and it was troublesome, yet the spirit behind it was unique. And I think it's as alive today, if not more so, than it ever has been, particularly when you see individuals today speaking their mind in all the venues in which we have nowadays in terms of communication. People speaking their minds, and that's a large part of its bane, and also its thrillingness is it's messy, it's unique, and I'm grateful and glad to be a part of what we're still trying to have in this country.
How long does the festival go on, Karen?
The festival will go on through the end of the month. We have Antigone, Lonely Planet, which is sort of almost a comic version of Antigone, if you can believe it, by an artist named Lina Kitsopoulou from Greece. It's Antigone and a group of skiers, among other things.
What's the website people can go to find more information?
They can check it out at the Public Theater and at the Onassis website.
Tim Blake Nelson, Michael Stuhlberg, and Karen Brooks Hopkins, thanks so much for being with us. Socrates opens tomorrow. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
Thank
you. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. We'll see you tomorrow. On Mondays, we like to help you get through the day with some good vibes. Today's Good Vibes audio coincides with Jackie Robinson Day. On this day, number 42, Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier when he debuted with the Brooklyn Dodgers on April 15th, 1947. Robinson's contributions to fairness and equality weren't only executed through sports. He was a civil rights advocate in his later years as well. For example, when demonstrations were in full force to desegregate stores and lunch counters in Birmingham, Alabama, Jackie Robinson traveled there to show his support. Today, Birmingham makes news for what was once unthinkable. It has a black mayor and a black police chief. But back then, the images were of police unleashing high-pressure fire hoses on activists and sending dogs after teenage protesters. Robinson knew he could use his stature and position to help. He said at the time, quote, "Whenever and wherever in the South the leaders believe I can help, just the tiniest bit, I intend to go." And he did. Today's good vibes are from the man himself. In his own words, from a rally in Birmingham, Alabama, here's Jackie Robinson.
"I don't think you realize down here in Birmingham what you mean to us up there in New York. And I don't think that white Americans understand what Birmingham means to all of us throughout this country. When we think about the little kids being tossed from one side of the street to the other by the tremendous force of this hose, and we think about, this picture just sickens me, this big brave policeman down here with his knee on the throat of this lady. And the problem of it is, ladies and gentlemen, is that this same picture of the dogs and of this policeman with his knee in the throat of this lady, it's a picture that's being portrayed throughout the world. And I think the conscience of America is beginning to awaken. I think the first steps that were made here by the Birmingham businessmen with Dr. King and the other leaders down here is an indication that perhaps the conscience of Birmingham is beginning to awaken. The only thing that we are demanding is that we be allowed to move ahead just like any other American citizen."
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Welcome back. I'm Allison Stewart. Grammy Award-winning musician Bruce Hornsby stopped by our studio for a chat about his storied career, the legacy of his mega hit, The Way It Is, and about his new album, Absolute Zero. It features a new wave of indie artists, including Bon Iver's Justin Vernon, chamber ensemble Y Music, and British trio The Staves. Bruce played an extra song from his record after our show went off the air, and we'd like to bring that to you now. Take a listen.
Hey, All of It listeners, this is Bruce Hornsby with a song about IRS tax return examiners and CPAs as American heroes.
Silent room, 100 strong, some mirroring distant music is setting the mood, tedium here. In his cubicle, he's doing his work. The same thing daily, papers and forms, staring, concentrating on the ledger. No room for error. Hours on end, takes a dogged man of great endurance, and nobody knows, nobody will speak a word, at least no speaking out loud, no note comparing, no jokes told, it's just not allowed, no one lines up the ceiling of being endless toil and grind, it takes so much not to snap, not to lose a mind. And your 10-minute break, nobody knows, nobody cares, but you know who you are. Today's frontier man herding, taming an ending paper flood, guarding the fort from disaster for you people. the brotherhood of TDR in a Spartan chair. A hero for our time and still officer. Here's some white noise for your pot and a cubic cold. Music and meds and the white noise. Ease the pressure down in your crucible. Will the drugs help? Little music, isometrics, white noise in your pot, relaxing white noise.